This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The LEAP Manifesto, a call for Canada based on caring for the Earth and one another, outlines a bold new vision for a just and sustainable future. It also calls directly for the transition of this country away from a fossil fuel economy. The LEAP Manifesto was initiated by Naomi Klein and backed by a high-profile group of scientists, economists, artists, activists, journalists, and community leaders. It was launched in the middle of this month, smack in the middle of a high-stakes federal election. The manifesto is also a petition, which you can read and endorse at leapmanifesto.org. Seth Klein is the BC director of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives and author of the background document, We Can Afford the LEAP. It's an economic analysis of what it would take to fund the LEAP. Seth is also the brother of LEAP Manifesto's initiator, Naomi Klein. Hello, Seth. Good morning.
Hi, Lorraine.
Now, Naomi described this as an attempt to lay out a nuts and bolts policy agenda, and at the same time as a transformative agenda. LEAP sets out 15 demands. What are the key elements of the manifesto?
Well, I think its principal imperative when the initial group got together to launch the thing was the climate crisis imperative. And so there are key elements around moving Canada to 100% clean electricity by 2035, so basically in 20 years, and to become wholly carbon zero by mid-century, so not that long after that, another 15 years after that. To have an ambitious green infrastructure and green jobs plan to ensure just transition for workers and impacted communities. The whole issue of Indigenous rights and title figures very prominently in the manifesto. It's really the initial declaration that is key to honoring those rights are key to moving forward in a just way. But it's a social document as well as an economic and climate document. So it talks about moving back to an economy that emphasizes social infrastructure and social programs, these low-carbon jobs in which we care for one another in areas like childcare and health and education. So all of that is part of it. There's about 15 separate demands that are embedded in the manifesto.
Yeah, and I read the set of 15 demands, and it's interesting how it's like quite a holistic approach to a big change to Canada.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, whether or not, I wouldn't necessarily call it in whole nuts and bolts approach. I think its main intent is to be more visionary. And to give you a little bit more background, I mean, all of this started, Naomi convened about 60 activists and social justice organizations back in May. And so you had labor leaders and faith leaders and First Nations leaders and environmental leaders and activists who were present at this meeting in Toronto in May. And there were really two issues that they were wrestling with. One was this realization that a federal election was coming. It was going to be 2 months before the Paris climate meetings, and none of the major parties were likely to deal seriously enough with climate. And then the other piece of the context was this major drop in oil prices, and trying to think about, instead of just panicking about that and what it means for parts of the country that are particularly reliant on that, like Alberta, to look at it as a gift in a way, as an opportunity to rethink the kind of gold rush fossil fuel mentality that we have, and to expedite the transition into a new economy. And so two things came out of that May meeting. One was this very large march in Toronto in the early summer for jobs, justice, and climate, so all linked together, that had 10,000 people just ahead of the Pan Am Games. And the second was they began to draft this manifesto, and then, as you say, it was released earlier last week.
Now, the timing of the manifesto is clearly provocative. It's launched right in the middle of the federal election. Why that timing?
Well, it's definitely trying to take the issue of climate in particular and insert it more vigorously into the election cycle. Elections are a time when people are thinking more about policy and about the direction that we want to be moving in than we normally do. I think, you know, part of the dynamic that's at play and that the architects of this were conscious of, and I should say I'm not one of the architects, although I was there for the launch and saw some early drafts, was this realization that you had a lot of, you were going to have actually a majority of the country likely voting against the current government. And many of them thinking strategically about how to do that within their respective ridings and voting for what they viewed as the best alternative, but doing so with, shall we say, not tremendous enthusiasm. And so the LEAP manifesto in some ways is designed to say to people, look, vote for who you think you should and you need to, but here's the, in signing on to the LEAP, here's a chance for you to give expression for what you really wish you could vote for. And so far, over 25,000 people have already done that.
Now you co-authored We Can Afford the LEAP with Bruce Campbell and Mark Lee, and you start from the premise that we can afford the LEAP. Say more about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting, right away, within the day of the LEAP being released, you had all of these mainstream pundits and journalists describe it as this incredibly radical document that would be, you know, turn capitalism on its head and completely unrealistic. And Conrad Black wrote a whole op-ed of extended insults about it. But in fact, I would say that it only appears radical in contrast to what's on offer from the major parties now. And unfortunately, the bandwidth of what's on offer has become so narrow that the LEAP only seems radical in comparison. So the document that we produced, you know, it wasn't intended to be super prescriptive. It's really just outlining a whole host of options for how you could raise new revenues to fund an ambitious LEAP program. And was simply saying, look, there's all kinds of options. Fill your boots and you know, let's move forward with whatever we agree we'd like to do. But among the options ought not to be leading poverty. We're a very wealthy country. Just to give you a couple numbers to consider in this, let's say we tried to kickstart the LEAP with a really ambitious green infrastructure program of $50 or $60 billion a year. Now, $50 or $60 billion sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. It's much more than any of the political parties are talking about. And by any measure, we could do some amazing things with that that would constitute a leap. But $50 or $60 billion in a Canadian economy with an annual GDP of $2 trillion is not that much. It's about 2.5% of GDP, of gross domestic product. So the notion that somehow this is too radical or too ambitious, that we can't afford it, you know, our purpose in writing this document was to say that's simply not true. We can do that.
And you do look at a wide number of places where the money could come from. Do you want to just mention a few, and I guess with a bit of emphasis on the carbon tax option?
Yeah. Well, before mentioning the carbon tax, one point I would make is that because a lot of this is infrastructure spending, some of this is about shifting how we spend infrastructure dollars. You know, for example, British Columbia, we're about to spend over $3 billion to replace the Massey Tunnel with the Massey Bridge so that we can dredge the Fraser River and get ships up the Fraser to carry U.S. thermal coal. We've spent over $1 billion on new BC Hydro transit lines to facilitate fracking in the Peace and new mines. The point is that we already spend billions of dollars as a country on infrastructure to accommodate cars and to facilitate the extraction and export of fossil fuels. And it's about shifting that. There are a whole host of other new taxes that we could consider that we outline in that document, and it's up on the LEAP website. But you mentioned the carbon tax in particular, and I think that one is worth looking at, because if we had a really ambitious carbon tax, it would provide two purposes. It would both shift consumption choices and investment choices towards a greener economy, but it would also have the potential to raise considerable new revenue. But it would have to be quite a bit higher than British Columbia's is right now. We have a $30 carbon tax right now in BC. The Green Party is only proposing the same thing nationally, which isn't particularly ambitious. But if we had a $200 carbon tax, which may sound like a lot, but it would really just bring us in line with what already exists in some European countries, we could raise $80 billion as a country. And you could take half of, we've modeled ways in which you could take half of that and give it in a tax credit to low and modest and middle income families in a way that all of them would in fact be better off. We would actually have a more progressive tax system. And the other half, meaning $40 billion a year, would be available to invest in the kinds of things that the LEAP document talks about.
Seth, how would you assess the media response to the LEAP across the sort of spectrum of media? Because you mentioned Conrad Black and Rex Murphy was responding to it in the National Post, but there seems to be have been a range of responses.
Well, I think some of that's predictable, and as I was getting at before, I think there are these mainstream political commentators who kind of serve as guardians of what's acceptable. And when I mentioned that, the mainstream parties have such a really narrow bandwidth of difference in their fiscal plans and in their climate plans, it's because every time you seem to step outside the boundaries of that acceptable debate, you kind of get slapped back by these people. But in contrast to all of that, I think the fact that 10,000 people signed this thing in the first 24 hours is some indication of this hunger out there for bolder action than what we hear from our political leaders. That gives me some hope, I would say. And in terms of the timing of all of this, so part of the objective, you asked earlier, why now? I think the LEAP document in particular is written not so much for any political party now in the election, but for October 20th, for the day after the election. Because according to most of the polls, it's most likely that we're going to have a minority government. And that means that everyone's going to have to start moving a bit away from whatever it was that they ran on in their platforms and come to some new compromises. And the hope is that this document and all of the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands by then, of signatories to it will be some sort of a push to embolden a new minority government, that there is this strong will out there to be more ambitious than they've indicated so far.
If people are looking at the LEAP manifesto and they want to learn more about it and engage with it, both during the election and beyond, what can they do?
It's a very good question. Well, first of all, people should go to the website, theleap.org or theleapmanifesto.org, and take a look at it. If they like it, they should add their name to the tens of thousands who have done so. And I think the groups that were part of this are wrestling now with this question of how it gets further animated and built, particularly in the lead up to October 20th. It's a bit of an experiment, I think, to see what kind of support it can signal to whatever new kind of government emerges out of next month's election.
Well, it's been great talking to you this morning. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks, Lorraine.
I've been speaking with Seth Klein, and you can read and sign on to the LEAP Manifesto at leapmanifesto.org. And Seth is the BC director of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and he's the co-author of the background document, We Can Afford the LEAP.